Case number 21-5929, Polyweave Packaging, Inc. versus Peter Buttigieg. Arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Lee, you may proceed for the appellant.
Good morning. My name is Shang Lee, counsel for appellant Polyweave. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes rebuttal, please.
Very well.
May it please the court, this is the case about an agency's abuse of regulatory and enforcement power against a small business with only 7 employees by withdrawing regulations that promise due process, rights, and protections for the accused in enforcement actions during a pending enforcement action against that company. The department began to prosecute Polyweave in 2016, and informal proceedings ended by the end of 2017 when these regulations did not yet exist. In February 2019, the general counsel of the department recognized that its enforcement proceedings had been routinely violating due process rights, and therefore he promulgated a memorandum instructing agencies to provide...
assume we know all the facts.
Oh, sure, of course.
I mean, there are a lot of issues in this case, and you might want to just get right to the merits.
The point is...
How about standing, you know? Let's talk about that. You are, as I understand it, you're seeking prospective injunctive relief, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
You want the reinstatement of the regulation.
Correct.
And the enforcement proceeding is concluded, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Except
for
the appeal.
Petition here.
Yes.
And you haven't received anything akin to a target letter or anything like that with respect to perhaps some other enforcement proceeding that they're going to bring against your client. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor. However, I would say this is not in the record because it happened after this appeal was filed.
Okay.
But there has been communication regarding customers of Polyweave.
Okay. Well, we have to decide the case on the record before us. And so you're seeking prospective relief that would allow you to get, as a matter of course, certain documents if you were prosecuted again. And so as to that claim, I'm wondering why this isn't like City of Los Angeles versus Lyons, if you're familiar with that
sure.
case, where the plaintiff had in the past been subject to a chokehold and feared that he would be subject to a chokehold in the future, sought only prospective injunctive relief as opposed to damages for something that happened in the past. And the court said that he lacked standing because there was no actual or imminent injury. It was too speculative that he would again encounter an officer and again be subject to a chokehold. And so I wonder why your situation isn't the same. You're worried about the prospect of a future enforcement action, but we don't really have any imminent prospect. And you're worried that, you know, something might happen in that situation, but, you know, none of these things are sort of actual or imminent.
I think there's a couple distinctions, Your Honor. The first is that, as you mentioned, there is still an appeal of the administrative decision before this court. If Polyweave, and we believe Polyweave will, prevail in that appeal, it's very possible that the decision, the adjudication, will go back to the agency.
But, you know, we're speculating there, but go ahead.
But if that occurs, Your Honor, then Polyweave would be injured by the denial of exculpatory evidence from the agency. And that, I think, I don't think that's speculative in the same way that Lyons was speculative. In Lyons,
this is something we address in that case. I mean, that starts to, I'll be candid. I look at this case and I think, either they lack standing, maybe, this is my concern, either they lack standing, or if they do have some actual injury, it's actually very much intertwined with the proceeding itself. And ergo, we ought not to be adjudicating that in this separate proceeding.
Yeah, I don't think it's intertwined with the administrative proceeding, because the administrative proceeding, as Your Honor knows, is appealed directly to this court under Section 5127. The exclusive jurisdiction in that provision, it's limited to the Secretary's actions under that Chapter 51 of the statute. This regulation, however, comes from a separate chapter.
We couldn't in that proceed, because I have the same question Judge Kethledge has. If in review, in that exclusive review that would come straight to us, we would not be able to address the issue of what procedural regulations were properly applied or not applied?
Well, I think, Your Honor, you will be able to address whether Polyweave had a fair hearing in that appeal. But
we would also look at the law and see what kinds of procedures they were legally entitled to, and to do that, we would have to see whether they were properly in place.
Well, under the Your Honor, under
yes
the government,
no, I just don't understand that.
Well, let me back up a second, Your Honor. So, under the government's reading, the withdrawal of this regulation, if Polyweave had a pending administrative adjudication, under the government's reading, they would go directly to the Court of Appeals under 2157. However, another company, let's say not under current investigation or current enforcement, would somehow go to the district court. We don't believe.
Why would they go? I mean, they don't care. They're not, because these are procedural regulations that you're challenging. If they don't think they're going to be prosecuted against or enforced against, then those don't affect.
We think there's always a specter of these enforcement and prosecutions against companies.
Oh, wait until one of them happens and then challenge the procedures that you're given in the procedure that is applied to you. That's the sort of the standard way under administrative law to challenge procedural regulations is to, unless they affect what you do now, if these are regulations that affect, you know, the substantive activities that you're undertaking, that might make sense, but I don't see you making any, when you make your standing arguments, this is the idea that it's either standing or entwined. When you make standing arguments, you're referring to what's going to happen to you in a proceeding, because they're procedural regulations. You're not talking about what you have to do when you're out there conforming.
It's not a rule of conduct.
It's not a rule of
it's
conduct.
A rule for
That's
dogs.
What I'm trying to
it's
say.
It's the executive self-regulating, and who cares if the executive isn't acting towards, you know, a you or a particular entity?
We don't think it's just the executive regulating, Your Honor. The executive is promising third party rights in these regulations that are promulgated.
I mean, there's a sharp distinction between rules of conduct that take the form of rules of general applicability, binding upon subjects on the one hand, and on the other hand, the government prescribing rules, the executive prescribing rules for the executive. Here's how we're going to put contracts out for bid. This sort of like internal management of, frankly, an organization, not of society, of an organization. And I mean, I look at this and, you know, it's like this is the executive promulgating rules for itself, being transparent about that, I guess, and telling everyone, by the way, you don't have any right to invoke this on your behalf. We're just being transparent about our intentions.
On the point of the disclaimer at the end, Your Honor, we think a simple boilerplate disclaimer like the one that was in the 2019 regulation.
Okay, but that's fine. This is not a rule of general applicability, right? It's not a rule of conduct that binds us as we go about make our plans in life, right?
We think it does affect the regulated community's conduct, because it informs the regulated community what they can expect in an enforcement.
It doesn't in an enforcement, though. That's my distinction is slightly different from Judge Kelly's law. I take what he's saying.
Yeah.
But I think you could just limit it to these are procedural requirements that you claim need to be followed in procedures. And those procedures lead to results that are appealable in the Court of Appeals. So if there's a procedure that affects your right, if there's a procedural limit or some procedure that you're not getting in that enforcement proceeding, you can challenge it. I thought you were suggesting a minute ago that you couldn't, but surely you could. If, for instance, they withdrew something and they were required to go through notice and comment before they withdrew a procedural protection, and that meant you didn't get the procedural protection, the place you didn't get it is in an enforcement proceeding that's reviewable in the Court of Appeals.
Well, Your Honor, regulations under the APA by themselves, both the promulgation and the revision of which are presumptively reviewable.
Reviewable, absolutely. And the place they're reviewable is in the Court of Proper Jurisdiction under the APA, which in this case, unusually, is the Court of Appeals immediately, not go to the district court. That's where they're reviewable.
That's usually where you have actually, an injury.
And that's where you have the injury. Yes.
We think the injury here, Your Honor, occurs even though we agree that, which we don't, but even if the rights themselves were merely procedural, under Spokio and under the Second Circuit decision in Maddox, the promulgation by the government of a procedural right that is designed specifically to protect against harms that are traditionally recognized here, violations of due process, particularly the withholding, those themselves, the deprivation of those procedural rights by themselves give rise to an injury that's cognizable for standing.
There has to be actual deprivation. There has to be an actual or imminent instance
where we have there.
You would get production of some documents, and now, let me ask you this question. Let me just confirm this point. My understanding from the complaint is that you are not alleging that the government is currently withholding documents to which you were entitled under this reg with respect to the prior proceeding.
Your Honor, based on the magic of Brady is that we never know what the government may or may not be withholding. And in fact, we've asked the government.
But just my understanding is you are not, it's sort of binary. My understanding is you are not alleging that they are, I know there's a lot of back and forth and they cough stuff up, but that they are not, you are not alleging that they are currently withholding.
Well, the complaint was written in May 2021.
What's the answer, yes or no, and then we can go through the particular.
So yes, Your Honor, the answer would have to be yes, Your Honor, because they have not promised to give us everything that they're withholding.
So your position in this court is that they are currently withholding.
Well, Your Honor, we can't know what. We can't know that. I guess the point is, in May 2021, we alleged that they were then currently withholding documents. And then in July 2021, after first saying they weren't withholding anything, admitted that they did withhold health.
Get all that history. If they're withholding something, with respect to your prior proceeding, why don't we just address that in the other petition that you have in front of us as to that proceeding? You can go ahead.
Yeah, okay, thank you, Your Honor. I think the reason is, that proceeding will be limited to the decision of one party. The regulations here, it certainly injures that one party, but affects, it's a regulation of general applicability.
That's usually the way, on the basis of that, though.
I mean, that's why we have, standing law, and you can't litigate generalized grievances. The one party who's actually been hurt comes in and complains about it, right?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Well, any questions before reply?
Not right
now. No. Okay. You'll have your rebuttal. Hear from the government.
May it please the Court, Edward Himmelfarb with the Department of Justice, representing the Secretary of Transportation. Congress created a system in which an entity that's regulated by PHMSA can challenge the agency's action against it in court, but Congress was very clear that those challenges had to be brought through petition for review in the Court of Appeals. Here, the enforcement action against PolyWave is final. PolyWave has filed a petition for direct review in this court, number 21-4202. PolyWave has already filed its opening brief in that appeal, and it's making objections to the civil penalty that was assessed against it by the agency. So in this case, there's really nothing for this court to do at this point. The agency's administrative proceeding is now over. PolyWave has received all of the documents that it requested in that proceeding. And so injunctive relief doesn't work at this point. So the proper thing to do.
Set aside standing and on your affirmative, on the jurisdictional, statutory jurisdictional point. Are you familiar with the Axon case that's currently pending at the Supreme Court?
I'm sorry. No, I guess the answer is no, but I didn't hear the case.
There's a circuit split on the scope of these clauses that strip or that implied strip district courts of jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And the court is considering one of these cases in the FTC context. And I was curious, I guess since you don't know about the case, you can't really opine on it, I suppose, but it seems to me that that would impact whether there was subject matter jurisdiction under this statute.
Well, Your Honor, the only thing I can tell you is if the Supreme Court decides something that's relevant here, the court obviously is going to have to take it into account.
Yeah, well, what do you make of, so just the split is about, like, Free Enterprise Fund was a case that was a facial challenge to appointments of the entity there. And there was the argument that it should have only been brought through the process that was involved, and the court just gave it the back of the hand and said, no, this type of enforcement proceeding or this type of facial challenge fell outside of that because they weren't challenging a specific order. And I think there may very well be problems with standing here, but if I assume that they had standing, and I read the language of the exclusive review provision, it's only about setting aside the final action or order of the secretary. And an injunction on these procedural things would have absolutely no effect on the final agency action and that other proceeding.
Well, it would in the sense that the agency is not allowed to use the procedures.
Well, that proceeding is done. It would be prospective. So this all assumes that they have standing, of course.
Right.
But assuming that they have standing, it would just be they get their injunction setting aside these regulations. That other thing is happening in that other appeal. And then going forward, you have to apply the old regs.
Well, the only thing that's happening, first, these are procedural regulations only. They affect this entity only when it's being subject to an enforcement proceeding. These are not generally applicable to all, in the ordinary course of a regulated entity's business. They have nothing to do with that. And so they're completely related to the civil penalty enforcement proceedings, and therefore they're all totally bound up in that, and therefore the challenge to them has to be made on direct review.
What does it mean to be bound up? I would the way I read the text of this provision, it just seems to me you ask what remedy are they seeking? Are they seeking to set aside the final agency action in the other case, which I assume was this penalty for $12,000 or whatever the amount was? I might be wrong. And if they're not, it strikes me as I don't understand why it falls within the text of the exclusive review provision.
Because ultimately, the only reason they're challenging these procedures is that the agency is trying to reach a final agency action against them, or in relation to them, the final agency action could have been that there's no violation here. But their right to review is totally, under 5127, is totally in the Court of Appeals at the end of the proceeding. And if the court,
It goes back, in my view, to the, under your view, if there's a new regulation that is issued and somebody just happens to be, a new facial regulation that's issued and somebody just happens to be in the administrative process, that party that's in the administrative process can only go through the petition for review. Everybody else who might be adequately injured can bring their regular APA challenge.
Not necessarily, Your Honor, because you're assuming, I believe, that the regulation is a substantive regulation, that would be the only way that these other entities that are not participating in an agency proceeding could challenge it, because it would affect them. But here we're talking about so non-substantive.
The Enterprise Fund was a case. It was a facial challenge. It was to the way the it's not administrative judges. I'm blanking on the name. The way the entity, the federal agency, was appointed. So it was, in that sense, a procedural challenge, saying the appointment was unconstitutional under the Appointments Clause. And the court said, as long as you have standing, which was a risk, an imminent risk that this entity may come act upon you, this facial challenge was perfectly fine. You didn't have to wait for the administrative process to take place. So I agree that there might be standing issues here. But if we assume that they have standing, I'm struggling with why it would fall within this provision.
Well, I'm not sure. Which circuit was Free Enterprise from?
It was the Supreme Court.
I'm sorry. Supreme Court. I don't really have...
Could one answer possibly be that if you're saying the head of the agency is improperly appointed, then everything the agency does, which includes interact with people outside of the enforcement context is illegal, and then you would, then it wouldn't be limited to issues that of necessity only arise in
it would not be so, it would not be solely procedural. It would be in effect implicitly substantive also, but
the facts of the case were the agency was about to bring enforcement proceedings against us, and that's what gave us standing.
Mm-hmm. Well, but your position is if it's a purely procedural rule, you do have to be in a proceeding in order to exactly. challenge that, and because of this jurisdictional provision, that would be at, you know, after it's over, and you would bring that petition here in the first instance.
And you would make all of your procedural arguments here on the direct review proceeding.
I mean, if you had some analog to Rule 26 of civil procedure, you know, if an agency had some promulgated a rule or a regulation that amounts to an analog to some provision of Rule 26. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody on the street wouldn't be able to come in and say, geez, I'm worried I'm going to be, you know, in a proceeding someday, and I don't like that discovery provision. Right. They'd have to have something bad happen in the action right. and exactly. make some
exactly.
come in, right?
Exactly. And so if in fact the agency deprived them of certain discovery, I mean, discovery is really not, doesn't work right in an enforcement procedure. But if the agency denied them some procedural right like that, they would challenge it on direct review under this specific statute. They would go on direct review to the Court of Appeals.
Yeah.
And there is a case like this. I mean, if the ruling is that you can challenge procedural issues directly in district court immediately, then this court, you know, the courts of appeals are going to have parallel cases coming up all the time, because there are lots of agency enforcement proceedings like this, maybe not with PHMSA, but many other agencies have these proceedings administratively, and you're going to have...
Can I ask you a factual
absolutely.
Question? The plaintiffs in their brief kind of rather pointedly assert that the government has not directly represented to the district court, or perhaps to our court so far, that it has in fact produced to the plaintiffs all of the documents that this prior reg would have required them to produce, you know, the exculpatory
right.
kind of stuff.
Well, you're right.
You know, the representations have been, well, Your Honor, you know, we represented that we produce the stuff, you know, and some, what, I mean, I don't know if this is ringing a bell as to their argument. So I asked the question earlier of Mr. Lee, you know, are you alleging that they're currently withholding? And I guess I would ask you the sort of converse, are you able to assure us that the government has produced everything?
We produced everything, given the case file. They asked for additional documents of two categories. The agency thought that those were not relevant here, and they're not exculpatory, but they asked for them and added them to the administrative, because of course this is based on the administrative record, so they were added to the administrative record, and there are no pending requests for specific documents.
So your representation to us is that the government has produced.
That's what I've been.
To the best of its knowledge, it's produced everything.
Your Honor, that's what I've been advised. So I'm passing along a representation.
Okay. Well, that's
not my personal one, but that's what I've been
advised. No, I understand.
Okay.
Okay.
And so in our view, the proper thing to do is to allow them to proceed in the direct review proceeding. It's being briefed now. What this court should do, in our view, is to affirm the dismissal of the action in this case and allow everything to be to go through the direct review proceeding. And it's our view that the best way to dismiss it is under subject matter jurisdiction based on 5127. If the court chooses to do it in standing, we're not going to object to that, but it's a subject matter jurisdiction issue in our view, and the dismissal should be affirmed here on whatever ground.
Can I ask a follow-up question on standing? The parties in the district court on the constitutional challenge and whether Brady applies in the civil enforcement context, the parties seem to suggest that it turns on the merits. And I found that somewhat strange, because usually the way I think about standing is you ask whether you have an injury and whether your legal right is your claimed legal right is plausible. And if it is, that's enough for standing. And then you go to the merits, and if you want to reject it, say Brady doesn't apply in the civil context, then that would be a merits ruling, and we would just like rule in the government's favor if we agreed, rather than kick it on standing. Under the district court's view, whenever we reject a constitutional claim, it seems to me we would have to dismiss the claim for lack of standing. Do you see the concern I have with the government or the district court's opinion, which said this constitutional claim, you don't have standing to pursue it because there is no constitutional claim?
Like the Brady thing you're talking
about?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
we can't broom it on standing by reaching the merits of the Brady thing if it's colorable.
Right. I understand, but at the same time, it seems pretty clear that Brady doesn't apply to administrative proceedings. So whatever basis, whether it's subject matter jurisdiction or standing or some other basis, it's quite plain. I mean, we have a couple in their brief. They have a couple of district court cases from 50 and 60 years ago. The courts of appeals as far as we can tell, have never opined on the subject. They certainly have cited them. We couldn't find them. It doesn't apply. So, whether it's standing or not, Your Honor, if it's not standing, it's some other reason. You know, you can maybe.
Yeah, but he's asking about standing. Asking about, you know, our determination of whether they have adequately alleged the invasion of a legally protected interest. And uh-huh. You know, is this so? Do they have a legally protected interest in getting these documents or having this reg in place? And they say yes, in part because Brady mandates this regulation, and the question is, do we reach the merits of that Brady argument for purposes of standing, or do we just say it's colorable and therefore you satisfied legally protected interest?
Right, I hear you, Your Honor, but I think the way the correct answer is don't deal with this because it's direct review in the Court of Appeals. Right, that's the other case. I mean, that to me, that's the simplest way of dealing with this. And if you don't agree with that, then there are other ways of handling it. Whether it's
What about the fact that it's a generalized grievance? Like you have to show an application. Their constitutional claim, just in the abstract, was this violates Brady, and that's not
the rescission.
The rescission of it violates Brady, but. That to suggest that would be enough to create standing, then any time the government violates the Constitution, anybody could pursue relief.
Yes. I mean, I think their argument is only that, I mean, their argument is broad like that. I mean, what we would say is that the only reason they can even think about raising a claim like that is they're actually in this proceeding, which is going to lead to a final agency action. Again, I'm sorry to repeat myself, that goes back to the Court of Appeals on direct review. So everything gets put together that way.
I'm sensing that your institutional concern is not so much about actual or imminent injury under Lujan and what that means, but is rather having a bunch of parallel proceedings that bring you to Cincinnati every few weeks.
Well, that's not the problem coming to Cincinnati, Your Honor, but the problem is, I mean, you're right about our institutionalists. I think the court's institutionalists is very similar because the court doesn't want parallel cases coming up
in a
single agency. You love it?
We love it.
Oh, sorry. Well, in that case, I don't know what to tell you. If the court has no further questions, that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. We'll hear a rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. On this standing issue that Judge Kethledge brought up, I'm going to go back and say, well, imagine where Polly Weave was in May of 2021. There was a pending agency action. Polyweave obviously could not get direct review at that time, yet Polyweave alleged and believed that evidence was being withheld. And in fact, Polyweave's allegations were proven correct when the government then said, hey, we have been withholding some of this evidence, and here it is.
You seem to be saying that couldn't be raised in the context of a proceeding that's reviewable directly in our court. Are you saying that or not?
Yes, Your Honor. The regulations were
difficulty with because it just seems wrong. Well, it seems like you could bring that, and you would have standing within the context of that proceeding, and you could say, we was robbed, you know, and we want review of it. You can probably even get, you know, preliminary relief from the Court of Appeals, but I'm just speculating. But the whole design is that it gets reviewed without going through a district court.
Right. Your Honor, the exclusive jurisdiction provision, again, only applies to orders under Chapter 51. And so Polyweave could say this order was wrong.
You say that this, yes, but the reason that the order is wrong is because the wrong rules were applied in enforcing it. And that's been traditionally part and parcel of judicial review that they're talking about. If you're saying that when you go up on review, you then cannot challenge the procedures that were used when you got this to this because those rules somehow had to have been brought somewhere else, it doesn't compute.
I think, Your Honor, you could challenge the application of those rules, but you would not be able to challenge the promulgation of those rules.
I don't see why that is. You could say you didn't apply a rule because you thought it didn't apply to you, but the law says that it does apply to you, and therefore I should get my enforcement reviewed. This is standard stuff.
I mean,
people go in all the time. They say, yeah. Oh, I didn't get the benefit of this rule. And the agency says, well, we've repealed that rule. I mean, you think that could not be argued in the substance of whether they applied that rule in the enforcement that you're talking about?
I think that's the text of the statute does say that, Your Honor. And in any event, aside from the informational standing,
if it doesn't say that, then you lose?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Do you agree that if the statute that you refer to doesn't say that then you lose on this?
Or sure, if the statute says, and you can challenge the promulgation or revision of any regulation that may affect enforcement proceedings or affect
this
order.
This effective proceeding. Whether you can attack, for instance, the validity of a procedural regulation that's being applied in this procedure.
Your Honor, I see a matter of time, but I would say that the statute doesn't say that. The text of the statute says Chapter 51, and this regulation is promulgated
elsewhere.
So you've
got an order under Chapter 51 or whatever, adverse to you, and you come to the Court of Appeals in the petition brought in the first instance there, and you ask for vacatur of that very Chapter 51 order because they rescinded, in your view, wrongly, some regulation that adversely affected you in a procedural way during that proceeding. And now, you know, this is just like a Brady claim in a criminal case. And your honors vacate and remand and, you know, make them put the reg back or, you know, whatever relief as to that reg, and we get a do-over. I mean, you could get all of that relief in the other petition.
Your Honor, I think the relief we get would be somewhat different. We would get the relief of vacator of the administrative decision. We would not get the relief of reinstatement of the rescinded regulation here.
Well, if we said, you know, the reason we're vacating is because you wrongly rescinded, the agency might figure it out that they better reinstate or else this is going to keep happening. I mean, that's ultimately how we have the power. That's ultimately why the other branches listen to our decisions rather than say, well, my name isn't Marbury, so I don't have to worry about Marbury v. Madison, you know? Anyway, sorry. Why don't you take a minute and wrap up in whatever manner you like?
Your Honor, we think the district court here wrongfully denied standing here. Judge Murphy said, in addition to all these informational issues, there's still the constitutional Brady issue that we didn't talk about as much. But moreover, the district court's preliminary injunction decision, which we didn't talk about, was also incorrect because the district court held here the desk secretary has apparently unlimited discretion to promulgate or revise whatever regulation he likes, which obviously it's not true. Otherwise, all this sort of may prescribe regulation language would violate the non-delegation doctrine. So because of that,
assuming this is law, which I think is a highly dubious assumption, this reg, but anyway.
Thank you, Your Honor. Sure. But because of those reasons, Your Honor, we think you should reverse the district court's standing and preliminary injunction decisions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lowe. All right, the case will be submitted. The clerk may call the next case.